just an individual journey. You know what I mean? It also demands tangible supports that, you know, that foster safety and trust, you know? So when I think about tangible supports, I think about, again, I'm going to come back to community. I just feel like you need that community. You know, this just means that, like we creating conditions where survivors feel secure and supported in their own communities. You know, yeah. For example, like the healthcare system can play a pivotal role by offering access to appropriate services. You know what I mean? And ensuring coordinated care in their own community. So tangible supports. So this may look like connecting survivors with relevant community-based services such as group therapy, in the community skill-based groups, or peer support groups in the community. Those kind of groups have been found to be really, really helpful, you know. And also we've connected individuals and survivors with like dedicated case managers. You know what I mean? As someone that is able to be like the consistent point of contact for that person,
right,
in case they may need additional support where they are. Do you know what I mean? In their community. Yeah.
And they have like one person that they can always just reach out to.
So just kind of being familiar with other community services, with services within the community, is very important as a healthcare provider. Do you know what I mean?
For sure.
I
think like especially because I don't directly provide support to students, but I am like at the front desk. So it's so important for me to just be aware of everything that SFU has to offer. Because for us, like our immediate community is SFU itself. Yes. So it's so important to just, because it, at the end, it's like you said, like community is all about like, you know, all of us doing our parts to make sure that we're supporting that one individual's healing. Exactly. And we're all like all these different services, that whether that's like at SFU or even outside, we're all just working collaboratively and going off of what the other person is kind of bringing to support one person and showing up for them. As we kind of come to a close to wrap up our conversation, I have one last question. How can friends, family, and peers show up in meaningful ways for survivors without overstepping boundaries? I'm very curious about this one for sure.
Really good question. It's a really good question because I feel like, you know, with friends and family, and, you know, and peers, like their intention is coming from a good place. You know what I mean? You know, I think about compassion. So, you know, demonstrating compassion and patience for sexual violence survivors is central to their healing journey. But, you know, healing is a process that takes time. It takes time. It is not linear. At all, and it can often be messy and confusing. You know, and so demonstrating, you know, patience, demonstrating kindness, empathy, and compassion can make a significant difference. You know, So we can also show up. I think, so I have, when I think about this question, I think about a friend last year, she went through such a difficult time, Oh my goodness. And I wanted so much to go to her and see her and hold her and just be there with her so much. But she has her own family. She has her family. So it's not like she's alone. But and the thing is that, I texted her and I'm like, hey, would you like me to, I can come over, I can bring you, I can, you know what I mean? And but the thing is that, again, I was doing that like imposing in a way, somehow, like, do you know what I mean? The trauma just that she hasn't, you know what I mean? It's still fresh. And so,
Like she needed some time on.
And she told me kindly, she's like, oh, thank you, I love you, but I just need some time. I just need some, I'll let you know when I'm ready. I'm like, okay. So I'm like waiting. I'm like waiting. A month goes by. Oh my
On
God, oh my God.
standby.
But you know what? The fact that she was able to just let me know, like setting her boundary, like, you know what I mean? Like boundary setting in a way that is that comes with, love. You know what I mean? She's telling me that she's not ready. You know what I mean? And I appreciate that. So as, to show up as family members or friends or peers, we need to remember that we need to respect, like when they say, well, I'm not ready, we need to respect that. You know what I mean? And we can show up in different ways though. You know what I mean? That can be meaningful as well. It can be small acts of kindness. And this can be like, just kind of, either sending them like an Uber Eats, like just, something, small acts, really small acts, send a text message here and there. You know what I mean? I'm thinking of you.
So,
Things like that.
something that shows that you're still in their thoughts.
Exactly. Yes. And I'm hoping that I have a little bit of time. I wanted to share a poem with you by Maya Angelou.
Oh yeah,
Yes.
of
And
course.
yeah, is that okay to kind of end? I know this is our last question,
Of course,
right?
please, the floor
Okay.
is yours.
Okay. And I don't know whether the audience, I know some audience members may not know who Maya Angelou is. So she's a well-known author and poet. She's an African woman who experienced profound racism and discrimination in the southern states of the United States of America, and where she grew up, basically. But she also suffered sexual violence in her home at the age of 7 by her mother's boyfriend, right? At the age of 7. And so she wrote a poem years later. She wrote a poem called Still I Rise. And I think this poem to me speaks about hope, courage, and resiliency. Just continuing on. Still I rise. And I would like to read it for you.
Yes, of course. Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Of
Thank you.
course.
Okay. So you may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I will rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? 'Cause I walk like I've got oil wells pumping in my living room. Just like moons and like suns, with the certainty of tides. Just like hopes springing high, still I rise. Did you want me to see me broken? Bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries. Did my haughtiness offend you? Don't you take it awful hard, 'cause I laugh. 'Cause I laugh like I've got gold mines digging in my own backyard. You may shoot me with your words. You may cut me with your eyes. You may kill me with your hatefulness. But still, like air, I will rise. Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean, leaping and wide, welling and swelling. I bear in the tide, leaving behind nights of terror and fear. I rise into a daybreak that's wondrously clear. I rise, bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave. I am the dream and the hope of the slave. I rise, I rise, I rise. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Ira.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Oh my God, that was very, I got goosebumps.
Oh, thank you so
But
much.
yeah, that's such a beautiful poem, and it's coming from such a raw place, and I'm sure it resonates with a lot of the listeners as well, and they can take away that message of just resilience and just rising through
Rising.
atrocities as well.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you
I
so much for
appreciate
being here, Rachel, and for your time and for your words today. I really enjoyed our conversation, but unfortunately, that's just the time we have for today. But it was so insightful just talking about how the simplest things, just like showing up and listening and slowing down and being present with the survivor, can really just go in such a long way in their healing. And how, like, us as community members can learn how to show up in direct and indirect ways for them without just imposing on their boundaries. So, yeah, I've taken away like many important lessons from today, and I'm sure so have our listeners. And thank you so much to everybody listening. And remember that healing, like Rachel said, is not something that's linear. And it's not something that we carry alone. It grows and it is sustained through community and care, consistent care. And thank you so much for joining us for Healing Together, a special podcast created in the context of SFU's Sexual Assault Awareness Month 2026. Please follow the SVSPO on Instagram at SFU SVSPO to learn more about our work and how we support the SFU community. We hope these conversations spark reflection and connection. And until next time, take care and take care of one another. Thank you so much for listening.
This project was made possible through the guidance, technical support, and generous hosting of CJSF 90.1 FM. We wish to recognize the assistance offered by CJSF volunteers, and our gratitude also goes to Duane Woods at the SFU Center for Educational Excellence for editing and episode transcription. If you or someone you know in the SFU community has been impacted by sexualized violence, please reach out to the SVSPO at our website, www.sfu.ca/sexual-violence. To learn more about our events and resources, you can follow us on Instagram at sfu.svspo. Thank you for being part of this conversation and for joining us in community.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
This is a Sichuan News Update. In the summer of 1968, performing a once-in-a-lifetime gig, a band of Bangkok-bound teenage boys decided to record their live performance, an album that never saw the light of day. Until now. Flash forward to the summer of 2016, music aficionado Marcus Pollard of Victoria and his wife were visiting Portal Burnie. On the trip, he decided to visit his favorite consignment store, This and That. That is where he found an acetate record of an unknown psych rock band, The Glass Cage.
So yeah, I bought a bunch of kooky records, bunch of comic books, including this one that was an acetate, and it just said side one and side two on it. And it was $4 and it was trashed. So I said, well, of course I have to get that. It's trashed. And that was it. About a couple of weeks later, I guess I got home and I just kind of tossed it on a pile. And then a couple of weeks later, I went and listened to it and went, holy crap, what the heck is this?
Having spent many years as a performer and booker in Victoria, Pollard says he has a good eye for seeing a spark in someone when they are still early on in their career. As a vinyl collector, he says he finds a lot of rare things. But he says 99 times out of 100, those things never leave a lasting impression on him.
But this, it just blew out of my speakers, and I just thought, what the hell is this? I was listening to, who was it? Somebody was talking about the first Radiohead record, and they said, not the second one, which everybody likes, but the first one, she said, it just smelled like BO and teenagers, and and that's kind of what this record to me sounded like. It just sounded like youth, you know, brawny boy youth. It was pretty cool.
From there, Pollard says he needed to find out who was involved in the young psych rock band. So he started looking.
I talked to dozens of experts in the field and collectors and archivists, and all of them went, no idea, no idea, no idea.
One day in 2018, on a post Pollard had made about the band on a Facebook page about Canadian music appreciation, he got a hit. Band member Norm Roth.
I thought he's going to ask me for my credit card and that we can get together, you know, or something like that, or he, you know. So I called him up and it all checked out.
Roth was one of the founding members of the Nanaimo-based band, The Glass Cage. Together with bandmates, 60 years earlier, he had written and sang the songs on the album. Then teenagers, Roth was the lead vocalist. Wayne Harbord was lead guitar. Clayton Millen was on bass. The late Terry Morrison was on keyboard. And the late Doug Hastings was on drums.
Well, old Pop, who made the recording, said, this is something you fellows will cherish for years to come. And we did.
That was Wayne Harbord, who came down to the Stagewise studio along with Clayton Millen and Pat Carpenter. Carpenter was one of the founding members of The Glass Cage, who was replaced by Harbord before they recorded the album. Carpenter says that in 1966, while he and Millen were 15 years old, the two boys decided to form The Glass Cage. Both were attending Nanaimo District Secondary School at the time.
The first guy that we got was Doug Hastings on drums. Clayton knew Doug, and you know, we asked him if we could do a rehearsal or two. He sounded great, so that was a good start. He had a place, in those days they called it a rumpus room, a rec room down in the basement, you know, that we could practice in. So that was fantastic. We needed a lead singer, and Norm Roth was also at high school at the time. He was singing with a group that was kind of more folk-based called We Three, and he had a great voice, and so we asked him, you know, would you like to become part of the band? We were fortunate enough to get him. And then the last person we added, of course, was Terry Morrison on keyboards and backup vocals. And his previous band, which was called The Cry for Justice, had broken up. And so we jumped on that right away and asked him. And that was how the whole band came together.
Millen says as a band, they took their music seriously, wanting to make it big. They toured across the province, playing every show possible. Millen says shortly after Harbord joined the band, they took part in a Battle of the Bands event in Vancouver, where they took on the local band Winter's Green, a band increasing in popularity. that band would one day change their name to Trooper.
We lived on West 64th off of Granville Street, and Winters Green would come over and spend a lot of time at our place, and plus the Collectors, who morphed into Chilliwack, and they would come over there. So we spent a lot of time, and we practiced like crazy all the time, and it was great fun. And we learned a lot, of course, because these guys coming over from other bands that were huge even at that time were really informative and gave a lot of information.
Then, when the band got invited to perform at the opening of the Fuller Lake Arena in Chemainus, BC, they knew this would be the perfect moment to finally record the music they have been playing for the last couple of years. Harbord says they got Jack Taylor, or Pop, as they called him, to come by and record their live set. Taylor owned the store, Sewing and Sound, on Nanaimo's Commercial Street, located where the Bank Rhode Island Conference Center now sits. Sewing and Sound was a store that he and his wife ran for sewing machines and music. Carpenter, who worked at the store after school, remembers Taylor's interest in audio recording. Taylor had a number of reel-to-reel recorders, which he used to record the band's performance.
And he was selling tape recorders, radios, all kinds of stuff, early cassette recorders. And at the time that he did this kind of recording, 8-track stereo was the big thing. Everybody had an 8-track machine in their car. You know, that was kind of the standard thing. And the 8-track tapes were probably, you know, about 6 inches by 4 inches. They're fairly big, but they would sound great in the car. You'd have speakers sort of set up in the back and the front.
The band recorded 5 of the original tracks, all written by Roth, as well as a cover of the Outside Woman Blues by the band Cream, and an outro jam session. But shortly after, as the boys and their band were getting older, their time as a Glass Cage came to an end, leaving the original recording without a proper release.
What did break up the Glass Cage? Well, it's a morphing process, basically. You just kind of decide on what you want to do. We changed the name again to Lemon, and we were going up and down the island doing gigs and that, but we were getting better and better, and people were telling us we were doing that.
Millen says he can't fully remember why the band broke up, but says it was just something that slowly morphed into everyone going their separate ways. So, in 1969, the Glass Cage, then called Lemon, came to an end. Or so they thought. In 2018, after first finding the album and meeting with the band, Marcus Pollard just knew he needed to get this album out to a wider audience.
I'm not a religious person, but I think that once I heard the record and once I realized that nobody else had heard the record, I felt that it was a sin against nature if I didn't get this out to the world. I really did. I felt that that for me to turn my back on this and turn my back on these people who I had met, I felt I couldn't do it.
So Pollard teamed up with his friend Jason Flower, a musician and archivist out of Victoria, who created the archival record label Supreme Echo. The two then started working to bring this 60-year-old recording to a modern audience. While Flower worked with a team in California and New York to boost the original audio to modern standards, Pollard started researching the history of the music scene in Nanaimo. He says he found that there wasn't much written about the music scene in Nanaimo during the 1960s.
There, nobody really seemed to know any of these bands. So I ended up, you know, writing a booklet for the record. It's about 5,000 words, but we got photographs of all of the bands, and just I hope that people in Nanaimo who were there will be able to go, yeah, this is it. This was it. This was our scene.
Pollard was also able to commission Salt Spring Island artist Bob Massey to design the cover art for the album. He describes Massey as one of the greatest poster artists of the 60s and 70s, who's best known for making posters for bands like the Tragically Hip, David Bowie, The Doors, Pink Floyd, and even the legendary Woodstock Music Festival. Working on this project has been a worldwide success for the original band members, finally seeing their album released on vinyl for the first time. This past Sunday, the first of 3 album release parties were held for the Glass Cage's album, Where Did the Sunshine Go? Carpenter says the album release party at Neptune Records in Vancouver was an amazing experience.
I actually couldn't believe the response. There is a whole kind of community of garage band, so-called aficionados, all over the world. And these guys have grabbed onto this. There were probably 60, 70 people who showed up in Neptune Records there, buying up copies of the record. We played it in the store, and everybody heard all the tunes. And it was just a great experience to meet everybody there.
Harbord says it's been great to get all the recognition from the work they did back in the 60s.
My youngest boy and my oldest son, they both heard the record on when they played a bit of it on YouTube. And they said, "Dad, that's fantastic. We're not going to be a forgotten grunge band. People will know who the Glass Cage was."
While Millen had to miss the first album release party due to illness, he says he is just so happy to see his album have its second chance in the sun.
Yeah, like we're not kids anymore. I mean, I'm 75 years old myself. So, you know, it's been a thrill. Everything morphs from one thing to another. And when it got to the end for me, I thought, okay, that's fine. I'm happy with what we did and how we did it.
Having the album finally be finished, Pollard says he feels so happy about how it turned out.
Jason and I had lived with this music for so long that we weren't really sure if it was great or not, you know, because we were kind of too familiar with it. So to see the world, literally the world, open up and go, yeah, this is as cool as you thought it was, is spectacular. And at the first party, the one at Neptune, it was all smiles, just ear to ear smiles. It was amazing to see. And these guys, you know, they're super spry, and they're all just, you know, being rock stars. Their record's getting reviewed. They've never had reviews before. You know, it's crazy. It's just it's so satisfying.
Pollard says being at the first album release party was such a surreal experience, seeing everyone meet each other and hear the music again for the first time.
The keyboardist, Terry Morrison, he passed away in September, but his daughter showed up to the record release party, and she and I had been, I actually found her and just told her about the project and invited her to come. So you can only imagine what that would be like. Like, she'd never heard the music before, you know, and her dad is all over it. Like, his keyboard is all over the record, and 15 levels of gratifying. So, and that was, you know, watching her just sit there and cry happily listening to the music was a beautiful thing. So
the group is now gearing up for their last two album release parties on Saturday, February 21st at the Royal BC Museum in Victoria, and on Sunday, February 22nd, at the Vault Cafe in Nanaimo. The release party at the Royal BC Museum is already sold out. Vinyls of Where Did the Sunshine Go will be available for purchase at the release parties. Physical and digital copies of the album can also be purchased on the band's Bandcamp. While not all the members of the Glass Cage are able to see what has come of the recording, Carpenter says they are grateful for every second getting to celebrate the music they once all shared together.
I'd like to pay tribute to Terry and Doug, who were, of course, huge part of the band, and just pay tribute to them for their contribution, and may they rest in peace.
For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie. Thank God.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
If you're a regular listener of this show or other shows on CJSF, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about what you like and why you like it, as well as ways we can improve our programming. To leave comments, please email cjsfprog@sfu.ca or call 778-782-4423. This information can also be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.